Hello and welcome to the third episode of Revising on the Run. We've made this podcast for busy medical students to revise on the go. We both love running, but you can listen to us at any time. I'm Alice.
And I'm Harriet. And over the next half an hour or so, we'll take you on a whistle-stop tour of key topics for medical school finals.
This episode, we'll be covering some cardiology. So cardiology always comes up in finals, and it's the first chapter of medical textbooks. It's really important. We can't cover it all in half an hour, so today we're just going to have a whiz through murmurs, which turn up in OSCEs and written papers and everywhere.
Okay, so we've got our cups of tea ready, so let's start with the basics of heart sounds. Now, this still always gets me, even after 6 years.
Oh dear. Uh-oh.
But for heart sounds, we've got S1 and S2, so lub, dub. S1 is when the mitral and tricuspid valves close.
Yes.
And then S2 is when the aortic and pulmonary valves close.
Yes.
So you have lub, and then you have systole, when the ventricles are squeezing the blood out.
Yep.
And then you have dub, when the aortic and pulmonary valves close, and that marks the end of systole and the beginning of diastole.
Yes.
We got it right.
That's right.
Okay.
So why would you hear a murmur?
So you hear a murmur when you have turbulent flow. That's what I always remember.
Yeah.
So when the valves maybe aren't quite shutting properly, mm-hmm. or there's a narrowing in one of the valves. So instead of having the lub-dub, you have added sounds.
Yeah.
They can either be in systole, which is between lub and dub, or in diastole, which is after dub.
Yeah. And you can tell which one S2 is by putting your fingers over the carotid, and the pulse of the carotid should be at the same time as S2, the end of the pulse of the carotid.
Okay.
But you can also just tell because there's a longer gap between S2 and S1 than there is between S1 and S2. Mm. Unless somebody's heart is going really quickly. Okay, cool. So we're good. We've got S1, S2.
Right.
It's also S3 and S4.
Yeah, tell me about those.
So those are extra heart sounds. So S3 is after S2, and S4 is just before S1.
Okay.
So S3 can be normal in, like, young, fit people, or you can get it with some other, like, problems, like if you have, like, a stiff left ventricle. And S4 is really bad, and that means that you've got ventricular failure.
And we've got it's Kentucky.
That's
S3.
And so for S4 is Tennessee. So S3 is Kentucky, where Ken is S1,
yeah.
Tuck is S2, and the E is S3.
Yeah.
Kentucky. And S4 is Tennessee, where the T is S4, okay. The N is S1, and the C.
Tennessee.
Yeah.
Right. Hope that makes sense, listeners.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk about some murmurs.
Okay. So we've already said that murmurs is an added sound and it signifies turbulent flow. Is there a better definition for a murmur?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the name kind of explains it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Exactly. But I don't know about you, I always find it difficult to know exactly what I'm listening to. And it's one of the things I'm most worried about, I think, about finals. Even though, when you listen, often you can get it right.
Yeah.
But it just gives me a bit of fear. So let's work it out. Let's work out what's going on.
Okay. Yeah. So, should we talk, first of all, about systolic murmurs?
Okay, yeah. So, it's systolic murmurs. So that means it's taking place between S1 and S2.
Yes.
And there's different things which can cause systolic murmurs.
Yes.
Okay, tell me what they are, please.
Okay, so if you hear a systolic murmur, your differential is mitral regurgitation, aortic stenosis, atrial septal defect, a ventricular septal defect, tricuspid regurgitation, or pulmonary stenosis.
So the way I think of it is that the sound happens when the blood is being pushed out. Is that right?
Yeah.
So whilst the ventricles are squeezing, mm-hmm. then the sound happens.
Yeah.
So with aortic stenosis, you are squeezing the left ventricle is squeezing blood through the aortic valve, but the aortic valve is a bit narrow.
Yeah.
So then you get the turbulent flow.
Yeah.
And then mitral regurge then.
So with mitral regurge, your valve is supposed to be closed during systole, but it's not quite closed. So blood flows through the mitral valve.
Goes backwards, that makes sense.
Yeah.
ASD, so atrial septal defect, and BSD, ventricular septal defect. That makes sense.
Yeah.
More or less.
Pretty
contracting,
much.
blood is flowing through the wall between the ventricles.
Yeah.
And atrium. Those make sense.
So first of all, we're going to talk about mitral regurgitation.
And you said you find this the easiest one to understand.
No, I find it the easiest one to hear.
To hear.
It's always really loud.
Yes. So tell me what you hear.
You hear a parasystolic murmur over the mitral area, which radiates to the axilla.
Mm-hmm.
So you get them to lower the left-hand side, and you put your bell in the axilla, and you can hear the blood flowing back into the left atrium.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. The murmur's not always loud. It can be quiet if it's severe.
And it's quiet because if it's severe, there's less turbulent flow. There's more just flow.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
And so if you have mitral regurgitation, then you have blood flowing back from the left ventricle to the left atrium, and it can therefore go back to your lungs. And so therefore you'd get maybe signs of like left-sided heart failure and therefore pulmonary congestion or edema. So would you have like breathlessness, reduced exercise tolerance, can't lie down as well, so orthopnea.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might have like the signs of the heart failure, so coughing up pink frothy sputum.
So what are the causes of mitral regurge?
So you can get it when you're old.
Mm-hmm.
Like other systolic, like aortic stenosis as well.
It's a bit of a different mechanism.
Yeah. So this is just because it degenerates, it's a degenerative process as opposed to a calcification.
So the cauda tendini, which hold the valve in place, might degenerate. So then the valve isn't held in place and it flaps around.
And I guess you can get damage to the heart, to the papillary muscles, which are attached to the cauda tendini, which hold the valve. And you can get damage to the papillary muscles through ischemia, so ischemic heart disease, whether it's a chronic process or it's acute, bam, no blood to you, valve fails, acute pulmonary edema.
Yeah, so it's one of the complications of an MI,
mm-hmm.
is that you block off the blood supply to your papillary muscles, your mitral valve massively regurgitates and you have a pulmonary edema.
Yeah. Arrhythmic heart disease.
You can have cardiomyopathies. They cause your whole heart to dilate and therefore your valves don't meet in the middle, so blood flows back through them.
And they're incompetent. Yeah. And then you can have systemic diseases, which can affect your heart as well.
So connective tissue diseases. So lupus, Ehlers-Danlos.
Great. And then anything else on it?
No. Perfect. Let's move on.
Excellent.
Okay, so we'll talk about all the treatments of valve problems at the end.
Yeah.
But now we're going to move on to the next systolic murmur, which is...
aortic stenosis. It's the one I always know. I don't know why. I always remember aortic stenosis, ejection systolic murmur.
Yeah.
And that's where my knowledge ends. Tell me more.
Tell you more?
Tell me more.
It's an ejection systolic murmur. It radiates to the carotids. It is left-sided, and all left-sided murmurs are louder in expiration. And because left has an E in, and mm-hmm. expiration has an E in, so you know.
So it's loud in expiration, and it can radiate to the carotids, did you say?
Yes. Other signs, you can have a, because their valve's calcified, it's aortic stenosis is when you have a stiff valve, and so it doesn't open properly. It can also click when it opens, because they're stiff,
mm-hmm.
so you can hear that ejection click at the start of systole. Just
yes.
before the murmur.
That makes sense.
You can feel a slow rising pulse.
And that always makes sense to me because the blood isn't coming out as a single straight shh.
Yeah.
It's like trying to get through. Yeah, so if you feel your radial pulse.
You're kind of feeling the murmur in the pulse.
Mm.
Although, I've never felt one.
I don't think I have either.
The apex beat is described as sustained, which, because it's having to push against a stiff valve for a long time.
It's a bit longer.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So what is the classic triad of symptoms for aortic stenosis?
I've got this. Exercise-induced syncope, dyspnea, and angina.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
And then what's your Hades syndrome?
Oh yeah, my friend taught me about this.
Tell me.
She's very clever. It's a combination of aortic stenosis and microcytic anemia from angiodysplasia in the bowel wall. Because you have chronic hypoxia to the bowel wall, so you get all these funny capillary tufts growing, which then bleed.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Because of the hypoxia caused by the aortic stenosis.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And it's called Hades syndrome, which sounds like an acronym, but it's actually just the name of the guy.
Like Hades from the underworld.
But spelled differently.
Okay, causes of aortic stenosis. So old people get aortic stenosis.
Yeah, you know? Calcified valves.
And you're more likely to have a calcified valve if you had a bicuspid aortic valve.
Yes.
You should have three leaflets. If it only had two leaflets, you're more likely to have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Rheumatic fever can lead to aortic stenosis. And chronic kidney disease, Paget's disease, they can both lead to aortic stenosis because you have hypercalcemia.
Okay.
And radiation.
Hmm. All right then.
Yeah.
And then other things can cause outflow tract obstruction. So outflow tract obstruction just means there is something blocking the blood going out of the heart with the aorta, through the aorta. And there can be something like a myxoma, so a tumour.
Yeah.
An atrial myxoma, so that's an outflow tract obstruction. Or you could have a hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy.
Is that the familial one where you get overgrowth of the septum between the ventricles and then it blocks off the outflow track and it's a cause of sudden death.
Yes, yeah. Footballers.
Yeah.
Footballers.
And other people.
And other people. Not just footballers. Okay, so is that it for aortic stenosis? Are we done?
Yeah, we can talk about the treatments later. So now we're going to talk about we need to talk about ASDs and VSDs.
Okay.
The other, and tricuspid weakage.
So these are the other reasons for having a systolic murmur.
Yeah. So ASDs and VSDs are usually congenital, but you can get a VSD after an MI.
Mm, can you even know that?
Yeah.
I saw a lot of these at Great Ormond Street, and still I'm not an expert in all of this after 6 weeks. So ASD, hole in the between atrium.
And VSD is a hole between the ventricles.
Okay.
So an ASD, you hear it around the pulmonary valve.
That's in the second intercostal space, left...
Like, oh, prostitutes. Yes.
So left, what do you call it?
Left sternal edge.
Okay.
Yes. And that's ejection systolic murmur, an ASD.
Mm-hmm. And then the VSD?
A VSD is on the lower left sternal edge. It's a systolic murmur.
Okay.
If it's really large, then again you wouldn't hear anything.
Because it's just free-flowing.
Yeah.
Having fun. And then tricuspid regurg was the other one which you said.
Yeah.
Which is less common.
Yeah, although I've heard it.
Have you?
Patients, yeah.
I probably have, just wasn't paying attention.
And it's a pansystolic murmur, loudest at the tricuspid area. And so we said that when mitral regurg was on the left side of your heart, and so it backed up to your lungs and you got pulmonary edema, tricuspid regurg is on the right side of your heart, so it backs up to your systemic circulation and you get systemic edema.
And that makes sense, well.
Yeah.
And what about pulmonary stenosis then?
So as far as I'm aware, it exists, but it just doesn't really cause anyone any problems.
Okay, so we can move on.
Yes.
Let's do that one then. Right. So, what comes next, Alice Fisking?
Next up is diastolic murmurs.
Okay.
So we've talked about all the systolic murmurs that we can think of. So what diastolic murmurs can you think of?
So, we've said, I always think of it with aortic and mitral. So aortic stenosis and mitral regurg are systolic murmurs.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, aortic regurg and mitral stenosis are diastolic murmurs.
Can I tell you my really great mnemonic?
Please do.
It's really rubbish, but it definitely works for me.
I'll pretend to enjoy it.
So it's dimes, as in dime bars, as in D-A-I-M-S.
Mm-hmm.
Diastolic, aortic insufficiency, mitral stenosis.
Okay, and aortic insufficiency basically means aortic regurg.
Yeah.
Because the valve is insufficient to hold things in.
Exactly. And I'm aware that it might not work for everybody, but I found it really useful because it was a really short way of remembering.
Mm. Makes me think of dime bars.
I love dime bars.
I like a dime bar.
It's a good reason to go to IKEA.
So aortic regurg. So this is the one which I always think about with Marfan's. That's always, obviously, I know, Oscar, you probably shouldn't say that as your first thing, but I always think of it as Marfan's. Mm. So you have, like, you have a dilated aortic root, don't you? But anyway, it's because the aortic valve is incompetent, so blood flows back through the aortic valve. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so tell me a bit. Do you know anything more about it?
So
teach me everything.
Okay, so what do I know about aortic regurg? Aortic regurg is a diastolic murmur in the aortic area. So it's a left-sided, so it's louder on expiration, and it's also louder on leaning forward. So aortic regurg is the one with all the eponymous signs. So, time for a little quiz.
Go for
Harry,
it.
What is the Musset's sign?
It's where your head bobs in with your aortic regurgitation.
Yes. What's Corrigan's sign?
Pass.
Corrigan's sign is where your earlobes wiggle in time with the pulsations. What's Quinky's sign?
Nail beds, like pulsating.
Yep. What's Trowbee's sign?
I have absolutely no idea.
That's, you hear a pistol shot sound over the femorals.
You hear?
Hear. Mm. I thought you could just feel it. I thought you'd felt pistol shot femorals, but apparently you can hear it. And do you know what an Austin Flint murmur is?
I've heard of it, but no, I have no idea.
It's a low-pitched diastolic murmur that you hear over the left ventricle somewhere due to the blood flowing back down.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you. I'm really enjoying this bread, by the way. Oh, delicious.
I aim to please.
So, causes of aortic regurg. So, like, don't say this first thing, Oscar, but we've said the Marfan's one already.
Yeah. That's one of the less common ones.
Less common. And the more common ones is an aortic aneurysm.
Yeah.
So that's when your aorta becomes dilated, I guess. And then calcified aortic wall.
Rheumatic heart disease.
Endocarditis, so an infection.
A bicuspid aortic valve. So we said already it could cause aortic stenosis, but it also makes you more susceptible to regurg.
To it being incompetent.
Yeah. And you can have both stenosis and regurg at the same time.
And then you can get it acutely as well?
So, as an acute consequence of rheumatic fever, infective endocarditis. Or if you have an aortic dissection.
That makes sense that I would do that.
Or an aneurysm rupture.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that all? That's all?
All of them?
No. We've not done mitral stenosis.
Okay. We missed one. So, mitral stenosis. So, it also is a diastolic murmur. So, let me try and think. It's mid-diastolic.
I find it really difficult to work out why the diastolic murmurs happen when they do, so I think it's better just to learn
it.
Just to learn it. Mitral stenosis is mid-diastolic.
Okay.
How do you accentuate the murmur?
So, listen over the mitral area, and it will be loudest, it's a left-sided murmur, it's loudest on expiration. You listen with a bell.
Yep, and what do you do when you listen with the bell?
Do you get to roll onto the bell?
Yeah, you get them to roll onto the left-hand side.
Okay.
Just to bring the valve closer to the...
Okay, to the stethoscope.
Yeah.
And I was reading earlier that if you press the bell hard down onto them, it makes it become more like a diaphragm. So you should always press quite lightly with the bell.
Oh,
that's quite interesting.
Hot tip.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's from the Oxford Handbook, but all enjoy.
Yeah. What are the sequelae of having mitral stenosis?
I know that atrial fibrillation is really common with mitral stenosis.
Yeah.
And that's because of the higher pressure that you get backing up into the atrium?
Yeah, so your left atrium enlarges
okay
immediately.
And it's just really common. Too often.
Yeah.
They're in hand in hand.
And then pulmonary edema as well, because of the backing up of the flow.
And I never know why, but you can get made a flush. Is it made of mitral facies? So a red flush in the face. Mitral stenosis.
And apparently it's to do with the pulmonary hypertension.
Maybe a sign from the end of the bed that you might be able to see.
Yeah. We won't go into the
pathology. But also it can be caused...
pathology of it now.
I was reading because you're a farmer.
Okay. So, mitral stenosis, what's it caused by? What's the most common cause?
Rheumatic fever. And you can also get it because you have calcification of your valve.
Yeah.
You can get it because you have carcinoid tumours.
Yeah, so pressing on your mitral.
From the lung, maybe.
Yeah.
Or infective endocarditis.
Yeah. So now might be a good time to just talk quickly about rheumatic fever.
Okay, I think it would be a wonderful time.
So it's not very common in this country, but it's really common in the developing world.
And what is rheumatic fever? You told me this earlier.
Rheumatic fever is post-streptococcal infection, group A strep.
I don't know how I always forget that. Post-strep. So you've had a sore throat and then it goes down to your heart.
So it's an immunological reaction.
Very interesting.
It's really interesting. Yeah, so you have a sore throat and then later you develop rheumatic fever.
So it's not infective as such.
No. Although the throat problem is infective. So you can, there's different problems you can get with rheumatic fever. There's a nice mnemonic to remember the major criteria for rheumatic fever, which is, so they're called the Benz-Jones criteria, and the mnemonic is Jones, as in J-O-N-E-S.
The bootmaker. As in the bootmaker.
As in the bootmaker. But also the guy who came up with these criteria.
So J is for what's J for?
Joints. So you get arthralgia. O is for obvious, which is the heart.
Right.
N is for nodules, and they're painless nodules over the wrist or elbow or knees. E is erythema marginatum, which is this funny rash that is like swirly. You can look it up on the internet. And do you know what S is?
No idea. What is it?
It's Citizen's Korea.
I mean, on the tip of my tongue.
And there's some minor criteria as well. You need two major or one major plus two minor criteria.
Okay, so that's fever, joint pain, increased white cell count, and raise the ESR. Change your ECG, or maybe you've had rheumatic heart disease already.
Yeah.
That's not a minor. Okay, great.
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 So, what would you see on the ECG of somebody with mitral stenosis?
They've got, they have an enlarged enlarged left atrium. So you see signs of an enlarged left atrium, such as P mitrali?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you'd have a split, bifid P wave.
Yeah, it looks like an M.
Okay. Oh, I feel quite proud of myself, how I worked my way back.
But only if they've not got atrial fibrillation.
Then you wouldn't see any P-waves.
You wouldn't see any P-waves at all. Okay, cool. So that's all the murmurs. So then we said we were going to talk about how to treat them.
So those are all the... those are all the murmurs?
So we've not talked about tricuspid stenosis or pulmonary regurgitation.
Do we need to talk about those?
I don't think so. Not for finals.
Not for finals.
No.
Okay. So how do we treat them?
So if they're asymptomatic and small, you can just leave them alone.
And by small, you do that on an echo, do you, and look at the flow between either side of the heart?
Yeah.
And the very clever machines have a very clever formula.
Yeah.
Where you can look at the velocity over the valve.
So what might the medical management be of somebody with...
It depends what is wrong with them. You might want to, for example, in mitral stenosis, that's what we just talked about, wasn't it, mitral stenosis, you might want to take them out of AF. So in any of the mitral ones, you might want to control the AF, or you might want to help with a heart failure. So
that's with all of them, the heart failure?
All of them, the heart failure. So you might want to give them some ACE inhibitors or some beta blockers. So control the AF, their blood pressure.
I don't know, what else could you do? Well, you could treat the cause as well. So if they have a valvular disorder secondary to, say, lupus, then it's important to treat the lupus.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's, so the medical management is that, and then you can also do surgical management. You might do that if they're symptomatic, or there's some criteria on echo which say, oh, you should maybe intervene now. Or if they're having open heart surgery for a CABG anyway, you might as well go in and repair their valve. So you can give them a prosthetic valve, and they could be mechanical or biological.
I don't know the difference really. I just know that I keep going to see patients if I'm on the wards, and they're like, Reg just pick them out, and you can hear the clicking from the end of the bed of the mechanical heart sound.
I can never hear the clicking.
But like, if you take a second, you can always hear it. But afterwards, I'm like, yes, now okay. I can hear the clicking. But you get so rushed in doing it that you forget to listen up clicking.
Really mechanical heart valves last forever.
Mm.
Unless they get infected. But you have to be warfarinised. Whereas tissue valves last for about 20 years, but you don't have to take warfarin.
Interesting.
And you can replace aortic valves.
Transcutaneously. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, very clever.
So one thing I'm worried about is if you hear the murmur and they want you to present it in your OSCE, in your final. But I know that you have a way of doing it. So tell me what you would do. So say you heard this murmur in your finals, and you could hear that, and then they asked you to present it.
Okay, so the way I present a murmur is the six things you have to talk about. So you have to say the location, so where you heard it, the timing, so is it a systolic or a diastolic murmur, the pitch, if you can work it out, you know, is it low pitched or high pitched? That's really difficult and sometimes I don't say it. The character, so if it's soft or if it's harsh. The volume, so
that's the grade of the murmur.
That's the grade of the murmur, yeah. That's the grade of the murmur. And the radiation, so where else can you hear it? And the volume is rated out of six. So six is you can hear it across the room. Three out of six means you can hear it with a stethoscope, but not without a stethoscope.
And you can't, there's no thrill.
There's no thrill. Four, there is a thrill. Five, there's a really obvious thrill. Two, you can hear it with a stethoscope, but it's a bit difficult to hear. And one is you have to be an expert to hear it.
Yeah, very soft.
Mm. And so that, when you have those six things, and you have the rest of the examination, you combine it all together to give a differential.
Okay, so say you had a very tall man sitting in front of you, and you did an examination and you heard a murmur. You know what murmur I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, so present this murmur to me as if you were in an OSCE. Say the rest of the cardiovascular examination was normal.
Okay. Okay, so on auscultation, I heard a high-pitched early diastolic murmur at the left sternal edge, loudest in the third intercostal space. It was louder on expiration and leaning forwards. The murmur was 3 out of 6. And then you told me the rest of the exam was normal, but yeah. I'd also be looking for Quinsey's sign, Corrigan's sign, and Demosset's sign. And I'd like to palpate and auscultate the femoral arteries to listen for pistol shot femorals.
Okay, so none of those are positive that you asked for.
Okay.
What's your main differential diagnosis?
So my differential diagnosis is aortic regurgitation. Other causes of a diastolic murmur include pulmonary regurgitation and mitral stenosis.
Sounds good to me, Dr. Hosking.
Touch wood. So, how would you investigate somebody with a murmur?
So I'd start by doing a full history and examination.
Yes.
And then I'd like to start with some bedside tests.
Yes.
So I could do an ECG. I could take some bloods, including full like full blood count, because I want to look at their red cells, their white cells. I'd like to look at infective markers. I just, because they're in hospital anyway, I'd like to do use and use an LFT to see how everything else is doing, and if that their problems with their heart is affecting having any end organs, like their kidneys. And then more bedside tests. Well, I can't think of any more. I could do some imaging.
You could do some urinalysis as well if you're worried about infective endocarditis.
And then, so I've done my simple bedside test. So I'd like to move on to some simple imaging.
Yes.
So I could do a chest x-ray to see if there's any cardiomyopathy. I could have do an echo by the bedside, and you can either do that as like just a normal doctor, or you could ask someone to come and do it for you. You could ask for more cardiology, like expert opinion and imaging.
That sounds great, Dr. Pearson.
That's good. Alice Hosking, have you got any... This is our fun bit, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Injection fun into the murmurs. Have you got any New Year's resolutions?
Well, not yet. But in February, I'm not going to eat any chocolate.
In February? Not January.
Not January. January is too long.
And sometimes I think you need chocolate in January.
Well, I have all my Christmas chocolate to eat. There's quite a lot of it.
There is a lot of it around this house that I can already see. Okay. Anything else? Any finals related New Year's resolutions? Do some work.
Maybe. I suppose I should do some work.
Yeah, we should do some work.
Yeah. How about you? You thought you had some good ones.
No, I just saw on Facebook something about Veganuary, where you go vegan for January.
Are you going to go vegan?
No. But I thought it was quite a nice idea
when I saw it.
Well, what have I got in my... I got a brand new notebook for Christmas, and I wrote down some things I wanted to do in the new year. I want to exercise every day.
Okay.
Which I normally do, but because I've... my buggered my knee. I can't do it. Okay. Thanks for that, Emma. And I want to meditate, and I want to always have my hair done nicely, and have nice clothes on and wear nice makeup. I just want to look a bit more together. And like someone who might one day be a doctor, as opposed to someone who accidentally put on the clothes in their wardrobe.
But I feel like we can do that when we start work. So that might be my August resolution.
Oh, actually, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
All right, so maybe I'll focus on my other things.
Meditating.
Yeah, I want to meditate every day. So yeah, that's what I'm going to do tonight, by the way, when I get home. I'm going to have a yoga evening.
Okay.
Yeah, eat vegan food.
I'll eat my chocolate cookie.
And you eat, oh, that's so good, that chocolate cookie.
It's really good.
Right, so yeah, those are our New Year's resolutions. Oh yeah, and also work and study for finals.
Good. You're better than me.
What, at working?
Well, no, resolving.
We'll see.
So now we're going to do a case from a book. The book's called Medical Finals, Short Cases with Structured Answers. And it's written by the man who used to write finals questions for Barts.
Excellent. I want to get this book. But I'm not allowed any more books from the library because my fines are too big. So anyway, carry on.
Uh-oh. Okay. A 48-year-old factory manager presents to the emergency department with a 3-week history of exertional dyspnea, malaise and fever. During the 48 hours prior to the presentation, he has been in bed with a flu-like illness and a dry cough. His wife comments that his ankles have swelled markedly during this period. On examination, he has a harsh pan-systolic murmur, principally in the mitral area. So, Harry, what is the underlying diagnosis?
So, let's just break it down a little bit. The first thing I thought about when you said fever and new murmur, made me think infective endocarditis.
Yes.
Because there's something infective, there's a new murmur, alarm bells are ringing.
Yes.
You also said some other things. You said about... So, first of all, he's been generally unwell.
Yes.
So, there we know something might be going on there. But it's quite recent, isn't it? Or is it longer?
A 3-week history of exertional dyspnea, malaise and fever. and then 48 hours of a flu-like illness.
Okay.
So quite a short history.
But that makes me think, so there's something infective that has been going on. So yeah. Again, my brain also goes to rheumatic fever, but that's a different presentation because rheumatic fever, you have a strep throat.
Yes.
And then a little while later, when you're no longer feverish, etc., you have the immunological process going on in your heart.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm digressing a bit. So therefore, I'm going back to infective endocarditis in my head.
Perfect.
What was his murmur?
His murmur was a harsh pansystolic murmur, primarily in the mitral area.
So then I'm thinking about my differentials for pansystolic, for a systolic murmur.
Yeah.
Or pansystolic. So it's mitral regurgitation.
Yes.
ASD, mm-hmm. VSD. You can also get it in aortic stenosis.
Yes, an ejection systolic murmur can sound like a pansystolic murmur.
And then the other one is, it's the other side of the heart, tricuspid regurg.
Yes.
Okay. And then what else did you say? You said after the murmur.
That was it.
That was it. Okay.
That was it.
So I think he has a new onset mitral regurgitation secondary to infective endocarditis.
Perfect.
Is that what happened? Is that what's wrong with him?
He's got infective endocarditis. Yeah.
Anything else they want from me?
There's plenty more.
Oh, bugger.
List three eponymous signs associated with the diagnosis.
So, three eponymous signs. They must be the ones we were talking about earlier. It's mitral regurgitation.
No. These are the infective endocarditis.
Okay, I can do that one.
Yeah.
So, Janeway lesions.
Yes.
Which are non-tender on your palm. And Osler's nose, which are tender nodules on your fingers.
Yes.
Your finger pulps. So Janeway lesions, Osler's nose, and in the back of the eyes, on ophthalmoscopy, you can see Roth spots.
Yes.
So these are all microscopic, small. So,
yes.
Emboli. Microemboli.
No. Great. And there's some other signs of infective endocarditis which they haven't listed here.
Oh, I don't know.
You can get microscopic hemoglobinuria.
Ooh.
And splenomegaly. And subacute infective endocarditis is one of the causes of clubbing.
Very good.
Yes.
Yes, I remember that one.
Okay, what are the two essential investigations you would perform on a poor chap with this fever and new onset murmur?
Oh gosh, two essential.
Very essential.
Very essential.
Very essential.
Well, I want to have a look at his valves.
Yes, how would
with
you do
that? With an echo?
Yep.
Right, so that's one essential.
Yes, so you've got the murmur bit.
So what's the cause? Blood cultures.
Blood cultures, yes. 2 to 3 sets before starting antibiotics. Perfect. What are the complications of infective endocarditis?
Oh, I don't know. Just like your valves being bad forever. It's probably not the answer. Is it? Could your heart get big and weak? Heart failure.
Heart failure.
Heart failure. Okay.
You can get an abscess.
Mm.
And you can get.
Oh, the cat's got the keys.
That's very really clever. Cute. And you can get hemolytic anemia from the valve destroying the blood cells. And then you can get systemic complications. So, systemic emboli or pulmonary emboli. You can get meningitis, apparently, and renal failure.
Oh, dear. Not good.
Not good.
That's why you should get your U's and E's done in my investigations that I did earlier.
Okay, I think that's enough cardiology for now.
I do like cardiology though.
You want to be a cardiologist, don't you?
I think I do. I'm in the Cardiology Society.
Oh, I'm the oldest member by far. Everyone else is like second years.
I'm the worst publicity officer anyone's ever had, but it's going in my portfolio.
Excellent. Well, we hope this podcast has been useful, and if you have any feedback for us, we'd love to hear it. We're on Twitter @revisingontherun, or all our contact details are on our website,
which is revisingontherun.wordpress.com.
Okay. Until next time, keep revising.